Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast where we try to find solace in a world where our brains are usually against us.
My name is Aaron Gillis, and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson! Each week we chat to a different guest about how they try and live their life without misery, but we try and do it with a little bit of laughter, because otherwise that sounds like a pretty gloomy idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably.
Morning! Welcome back to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast that tries to let us all know that whatever situation we're in, we're not alone. Oh, and Happy New Year as well! Let's all start this year the way we mean to go on, by trying our best and kicking life in the face. Yep. This week's guest is Bryony Kimmings. Bryony is a performance artist, comedian and writer. Her current show, I'm a Phoenix Bitch, had a sellout run at the 2019 Edinburgh Festival. If you get a chance to go see the show, it is utterly genius. Bryony also screenwrote the 2019 film Last Christmas with Emma Thompson, which is kind of a big deal, really. This week, we speak to Bryony about sharing experiences, motherhood, and onion vinegar. Once again, as I say everybody week, and I am deeply sorry for it, if you're enjoying this podcast, please like and subscribe, leave us a little review, and recommend it to everyone you know. All the money we make from ads goes to Calm, and so far we've raised several thousand pounds for them just via this podcast. So you're doing a good thing by listening today. Anyway, that's enough from me. Here is Lauren and myself talking to Bryony Kimmings.
Hello, everybody. We are both very excited about today's podcast. One of us very, very excited. He's like a little fangirl in the corner.
I was hoping you weren't going to mention that.
I was 100% going to mention it.
Awkward.
Yeah. We are joined today by Bryony Kimmings.
As if people know who I am. the famous Bryony Kimmings.
How are you feeling today? All good?
That's a nice question. Yeah, I feel good. I like it when I come into London. It's so rare.
Yeah.
Have a little sneaky day trip.
Nice, little tourist, little M&M shop.
I actually had the thought in my car on the way in from the station that I hate London. No, I really hate it, and I've always hated it. And now I don't live here, I feel so much less stressed.
Yeah, I was saying this the other day, wasn't I? Someone asked me when, because our first question, which I'll ask you in a sec, someone asked it back to me the other day, and my answer was when I was out of London. So to make sense of that, the question that we asked to start everyone off is, When was the last time you felt calm?
When was the last time I felt calm? Well, at the weekend, I took my boyfriend for his 40th to a spa. Mm. That was pretty relaxing and I felt calm there. Is that true? I don't feel calm that often. I have a raging motor of anxiety within me at all times. I probably felt calm when I was having a massage. No, actually, I didn't, because I was going, does she think I've got a weird back? Like, should I tell her that my face hurts in the face pad thing? Oh, God, what's that smell? You know, all of that. So, actually, last time I felt calm was probably when I had some Valium on the plane.
Ooh, nice little treat.
Nice little cheeky treat.
Cheeky little Valium.
I can't fly without it.
Really?
Not gonna lie.
I'm quite a nervy flyer. But then I think I'd be too anxious to take Valium because I'd be scared if anything happened and we had to get off the plane and I would just be like, comatose out.
Just having a nice time.
Just fling you out down the slide. Whee! No, I took one. I don't know if we should. They're prescriptions, so it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not addicted to them or anything, guys. But I took one on the way back from last time I was in Australia and this woman, I upgraded to premium economy because it was super cheap. I asked and they were like, yeah, go ahead. And I took a Valium, drank a glass of wine and then slept for 12 hours. And the woman, when I woke up, the woman next to me was so angry with me just because I was able to sleep. She was like, you just slept for 12 hours. And I was like, I know. She was like, how did you do that? I was like, I took a Valium. She was like, have you got any more? So I gave her one. She slept for the next leg.
There you go. That's perfect.
Good. Take it.
She was livid though. Absolutely livid.
Do you ever find it any sort of calm when you're performing? Because we speak to quite a few comics and they say that their one place of calm is on the stage.
Jesus, no. They're lying to sound romantic. I don't think so. I'm too busy thinking, am I standing in the right place? Is this tone of voice correct? What does my posture look like? You know, I suppose it's different than perhaps, I don't know, it's a lot of movement, a lot of tech, especially in the new show, and also the new show is like super triggering anyway. Mm. I'm trying to find moments where I can embed CBT into it. Not that I'm particularly like well-versed in CBT because I do a different type of therapy myself, but I've been asked to do it for like quite an extended period of time. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I was like, I can't. Like, it causes me way too much stress to even like go on stage and get off. Edinburgh nearly killed me. Mm-hmm. So I spoke to my therapist about embedding CBT into the show, which could be quite interesting. Right. So there may be moments of calm in it, you know, just because there's many moments where, you know, just for over 5 seconds you could just do something, I think. And you could even tell the audience I've got CBT embedded into the show. If you see me like zoning out and counting something, then
it's a little release button, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it might be quite helpful. But no, I don't find it relaxing on the stage. I find it fun.
Yeah.
My adrenaline's really high. I'm really pleased with myself afterwards. Afterwards, I feel quite calm, unless I've hated what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Which is 9 times out of 10.
How during Edinburgh, because you were doing it once every single... Did you have any days off?
I had one day off, but then I did 2 extra shows.
Oh. Oh,
that's
so I had minus one day off.
Yeah.
So did you do anything to make sure that you were looking after yourself? Because like you say, it's a very powerful show. There's a lot of themes in there that like must be difficult to perform that many times in one month.
Yeah. For ages, when I made this show and when I was making it and when I was performing it, I was like, oh, this is nothing, you know, it's in the past. I was like really naively sort of like, oh, no, I've been through my trauma, it's fine. And actually, first leg of it in BAC, by the end, I was like in a spiral of despair or depression or whatever. And again, I triggered myself into like PTSD. So I was like, no, I've created a show. I can't perform. This is like, I don't know, Kafkaesque or something, you know, whatever. And then I started to give myself a bit of self-care. So by the time I came into Edinburgh, I always do the Sheraton Spa. Like, you'll see everyone in there. I kept seeing Jade Adams in there and like loads of cabaret performers and like circus people. It's a really lovely place to go. So I go there every day. I tried to meditate, but I find that difficult. I tried not to drink, but I find that difficult. But I was much more reserved. I think I went out 4 times, whereas, you know, years before I would be out every... I'd be the last out.
Mm.
Maybe Lauren.
That is true.
You know, like we're quite similar, I think. We're like... Part of the joy of this job is how fun it is. And I felt like there was a bit of a fun vacuum. But I still had a mental breakdown after I left Edinburgh. It's impossible not to.
Mm.
Whether it's existential, you know, FOMO, whatever it's triggered by, it's impossible not to, I think, to not get sucked into, like, it's like when you go on holiday when you're 18 to Cavos and then you get home, you're like, I live in Peterborough, what am I doing? A come down.
Mm.
Everyone blows smoke up your ass. Right, if you've got a good show, especially, and that's really bad for your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at all them celebrities in full meltdown all the time, like this, because people expect that once it becomes natural.
Mm.
It's like you do a show once or like a gig once and it goes well and you've got that like tiny little adrenaline hit. But then if you've got a good Edinburgh show, that's 26 days of being told that you're fucking brilliant and that you're a star and that you're this. I remember I tried not to let it get to us too much, but obviously I was so proud of what I'd done. And I was buzzing. And then August ends and you're like, oh, what next? What now? Yeah. And I'm kind of just walking around with my newcomer trophy being like, anyone want to remind me that I had a really good month, please?
Trying to go back through your Twitter feed. Read or your retweet.
Yeah. It got to like July, and my boyfriend was like, as of next month, so this was like last year, he went, as of next month, Lauren, you'll be last year's newcomer nominee. And I was like, no, I'll be old news. And it is, it's hard to wrap your head around, isn't it? I know, 2020, coming for you.
Yeah, it's not a normal game, is it? It's not normal.
So, what other kind of I hate the term self-care. Do you do like to make sure that you are getting through that? Okay.
Before the show, I do all these affirmations you were just about to say. I do crystals. Oh God, I can't believe I'm even saying that out loud. I've strategically placed crystals, which are much more for me like a sort of just ritualistic thing of like setting up my. Even in Edinburgh, I said, you know, I want a little locked box where I can open it, and it's got my makeup business. I need a box for my crystals. You know, actually, it's more about like making a safe space. Space in the dressing room, laying out some stuff that belongs. I have a picture of my son. I do these positive affirmations in the mirror, which have changed over time. Like for a while, it started with these are things that happened in the past and they're no longer active and can no longer affect you. And now, you know, I've been going through a bit of a wobbly time with my little boy and all of the trouble he's had since he was so ill, which is a lot of what the show's about. So I think one of them at the moment is, you know, Frank's a very lucky boy and he's going to be fine, you know. So just whatever, I change him to whatever might trigger me, because what I've realised is over time I'm not in control of my own brain, you know, despite being desperate to be and, you know, like heavily entrenched in me that I am, you know, able to will myself into anything. Yeah, I just try and sit with my therapist each week, and over Edinburgh we did it on Skype, and just change what they need to be. I also do deep breathing, visualizations. I cover myself with orange light. Yes, I do. Like the Ready Breck man. And I tell myself at the side of the stage that it's irrelevant. All of this is irrelevant. None of it matters. Nihilist, so, you know, like it's like, in 1.5 hours' time, I'll be drinking a glass of Prosecco and smoking a fag, hugging someone that I haven't seen for a long time, and that will feel worth it. So I've had to rebalance it and say, okay, this is never going to be a nice experience, but it's an experience that I give to other people, and those people that come up to me afterwards and thank me for that, that's my duty. And I feel like in that way I can handle it, because I'm not reductive about what it is. I actually hold it in the place it is allowed to be held in. And I've found that acknowledgement has helped. Yeah. Did any of that make any sense?
It really did, yeah.
When was the first time you became aware of like mental health being a thing, so to speak?
For me or for others?
Either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my mum's always had depression, so I don't think it was, not always, but had it when I was a child and had therapy, so she had a counsellor. So I knew that was a thing, but it was definitely sort of trauma related, and it was always related to, you know, breaking up with my dad. So I think I thought maybe that men caused sorrow. I think that's probably what I've been taught. So that might be my first mental health foray, is that it's attributed to men, which hasn't really gone away. or the patriarchy, perhaps. Brackets men. Another brackets, not all men. Hashtag all men. Anyway, so an auntie of mine had agoraphobia, like my stepmom had agoraphobia. So lots of different, you know, I've always kind of known that, well, I guess what I was taught was women are mental, you know.
Hysterical women.
Hysterical women, yeah. And that perhaps maybe that's why I've been like, oh, I'm not fucking running all. And then when I met Tim is my ex-partner, the son of my dad. That would make him, that would make him my brother. the dad of my son. Freudian. he and I met, and 6 months into our relationship I found antidepressants in his bag and recognised them from family members' use. And I think that's when in my adult life it became a really prevalent discussion. Still at that time I hadn't really ever considered my own mental health, apart from that I was all right, mate. And spent 2 years looking at men's mental health, and actually worked with Calm a bit on that, a couple of panel talks and stuff. Yeah, and we met loads of men who had depression, and I was like, oh, it's not just hysterical women, it's also hysterical men.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it was only until I got ill that perhaps I really truly believed that it could affect anyone. I would literally have been the last person I thought to get ill. Mm-hmm. But then, I mean, that's classic, isn't it? Like, yeah, sure, mental health, like. Mm. Mm-hmm. Not me, though.
Yeah, I was like that. I was exactly like that. I was like, I understand it must be hard. And then I got ill and I was like, oh no, this is proper. This isn't like having a cold. This is fuck.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
What did you have?
I got really depressed. But I was like, I ain't got nothing to be depressed about. Nah. Again, like, I'm not mental. I'm not this. I'm not that. And then I think the longer you deny it, the more problems you make for yourself. I just remember trying to rationalise everything and being like, everyone just wakes up crying, don't they? Yeah, everyone. Everyone falls asleep crying. Everyone has a breakdown once every day. And then it was only when somebody was like, no, Lauren, not everybody does that. And I was like, what do you mean? And I just justified it.
How old were you, Lauren?
Like at uni. It's probably like, yeah.
I wonder where it came from. I mean, it doesn't come from anywhere, but did anything trigger it or not?
I don't think so. I think I've spoken in the past on here about maybe it just being that transition from sort of school to uni and suddenly being thrust into an adult world and maybe not being quite ready for it.
Yeah.
And not quite, I don't want to say I was weak, but just not being quite tough enough to stand on my own two feet yet. And then suddenly just getting on top of everything. And I've always been a perfectionist. And I think that is my biggest. I think a lot of child perfectionists go on to be anxious adults because we are so used to being able to achieve everything and smash everything because it's in a parameters of you're at school.
Yeah.
And then you can't do that in the adult world. And that's very hard to accept when you're an adult of like, I can't be the best at everything. And I can't be, and sometimes I'm going to fail. Oh, and then getting into comedy and being like, oh, sometimes things are going to be shit and I'm going to be rejected and I'm going to be this and I'm going to be that. And I think maybe just getting a lot of rejection all at once and I don't know. But yeah, it's a thing.
Did you get it again?
I feel like now I come in and out of it, but I feel like I've got the awareness now. A bit, you know, like when you get a cold coming on and you're like, my nose is a bit stuffy, my throat, oh, I must be getting sick. I'm like, oh, I can't really get out of bed today and I feel a bit worthless and I feel a bit hopeless. I think I might be getting quite down. I need to make sure. The other day I felt like this and then I realised it had been about 3 days since I'd gotten the shower and I was like, maybe get in the shower, have a fucking wash, like go outside. And I know that obviously that's not the magic cure, but just doing those little things, I was like, all right, because I'm not going to feel better if I just lie in bed covered in my own sweat being like, why do I feel so shit? Well, you're already feeling shit and now you're shit and sweaty and now you feel worse because you're sweaty and then that pushes you further being like, oh, look at me, I'm disgusting, I'm gross, oh, why would anyone get in the shower, Lauren? Yeah. Even my boyfriend was like, you think maybe you want to have a shower? And I was like, do I smell? And he was like, just maybe get in the shower. But then little things of just being able to recognise, oh, things are slipping. What little things can I do to like just make things a bit less shit? Yeah.
Do you think it will always be there?
I think so. I think it's one of them things. I think if you're more susceptible to it, I think you're always more likely to fall into it. I think so.
You spend your days talking about mental health in a grey box.
Yeah.
We came to this realisation yesterday. We did it's probably the most depressing room you could talk about this in.
I'm going to start wearing really bright clothes.
Please do.
Jane, you're wearing a red jumper.
Red.
What happened to your trainers? Oh no, they're meant to be like that. They're cool. They're like marble.
They're little marble effects.
I love a Cortez.
Bit of marbling.
What made you want to make I'm a Phoenix Bitch? What was, like, obviously it's a true story, but what was that kind of process of going, I've been through this kind of really traumatic event, but I want to put this out there. So
yeah, well, I've always made shows about my life, so it's not you know, most comedians, I suppose, about their lives or sort of observational, I suppose. But so it's not weird, but for me, but I didn't think I'd ever make anything about this. When I had to cancel the tour for Fake It Till You Make It, the one about Tim's mental health, we had to cancel a big tour, our first mid-scale tour to like all the Theatre Royals and all that. We were so excited and, you know, set to make some good money for once. And then Frank got ill second date and we had to cancel everything. We put it online, you know, all of the venues were great. They had to put all these notices up on their website, give all the ticket money back. And some idiot just tweeted like, oh, you know, because it was like, our son's incredibly ill, you know, like, we don't know what the fuck's going on. We can't perform. Mm-hmm. And someone went, oh, new show? Question mark or something like that, you know. And I was just like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, why would you even write that? Like, yeah. Who, you know, I mean, people write crazy stuff all the time, but like, also just like, my mind was blown. I was like, no, I would never write about this. And for years, like 2 years, I was like, this has nothing to do with anyone else. Mm-hmm. This is the most horrific thing that's ever happened to me. And then I started, when I was a bit over it, and I started to go to support groups for like postnatal mental health and met lots of mums who'd also had postnatal problems, whether they have disabled children or not. Yeah, I was like, they were like, you never hear this story. Like, why isn't it all, you know, why isn't there more TV programs about it? Why isn't there more theatre about it? And I'm sitting there thinking, ah, oh no, I have to make the show.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, if I've built a career on sharing my life with people, then it would be irresponsible to say that this one was haram for some reason.
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah, nearly killed about me. Letting enough time pass as well, yeah, that you're like, no, I can do this now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure, like, day two, your first thought wouldn't have been like, right, okay.
Get my notebook
out.
Start yeah, filming.
Push the hospital bed to one side and just make this a studio space.
Shut up, Frank.
Yeah. Mummy's working.
Yeah. I'm making us a show.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You had lots of people coming up to you, because it is, there's not much discussion around postnatal depression, and in that, especially kind of like film, media, TV, comedy, etc. Did you get many people just kind of coming up to you, just kind of just thank you for sharing that story, like seeing themselves for that very first time up there?
Yeah.
Now you've said it, I'm like, I don't think I know anything about it. And that's quite scary.
What, postnatal depression?
I don't think I know anything.
It's very normal.
The only thing I can think is when I've read books and there'll sometimes be a character who's gone crazy. Mm. And I don't think that's a very good representation.
No, that's right. You have a baby, you go crazy.
Yeah.
No, it's very common. Postnatal psychosis isn't so common. Postnatal anxiety is pretty much, I think, a given. You know, because you've got this thing that's now like, it's like getting a dog, but like 10 times worse. You know? You're like, oh God, now I can't let this thing die or so I'll be a murderer.
I have so much to look forward to.
not everyone gets it.
I mean, I think I will.
Yeah, I think I will as well.
Let's be honest, if we're hard to put
but
money in.
It's that thing of like, you know, it's if we talked about it more and it was more heavily sort of policed, or at least in some way there was some provision for it, because it's very underfunded, then it would be part and parcel of the care you receive after having a child, because how can you not be completely traumatized by the most physical thing you'll ever do,
exactly,
completely anxious about not, you know, killing the thing that you've created that you love so much more than you've ever loved anything else before, just the extra stress of a partner who's then like, don't you love me anymore because I'm secondary, you know, like all of those emotional relationship things. Your relationship with your mother will change if you're lucky enough to still have your mom, you know, everything changes, and you're expected to just sort of like hold this little bundle of joy and just grin as people sort of try and touch it and take it off you, and you're like, get off. When we were in Australia recently, they do this thing, Welcome to Country, the beginning of a lot of touring shows. So someone from the Indigenous community will come, they'll talk to you a little bit about the context in which this work will be received by an Indigenous audience. Mm-hmm. And the woman was really lovely. Her name was Barbara. And she was from Torres Islands. So she was a Pacific Islander. And she was saying, like, in both cultures, well, all Indigenous cultures in that area, they don't have postnatal depression, is what she was saying. And I was like, really? And she was like, oh, well, no, we do, but it shouldn't affect us in the same way. So say you're my sister mm-hmm. and I have a baby. You're also that baby's mum. Oh. And our other sister's also that baby's mum. And like, if you were my brother, you'd be the baby's dad. Mm-hmm. So like, even though obviously not really, but like there's an element of like a support network. All of your mum's sisters are also your mum.
Yeah.
So they're not your aunties. It's all like, so if someone's struggling, they'll take the baby and there wouldn't even be a question, like your sister will take the baby and nurse the baby. Mm-hmm. So the community lives in a kind of like passing children around way, which I was like, I was so isolated when I had a child. I lived in the middle of nowhere. I lost my mind. I didn't know anyone. Mm-hmm. If someone had just been like, hello, I've just come to look after your baby for a few days while you have a sleep, I would have literally like kissed them.
Yeah.
Been their best friend forever. So we're not designed to cope with mental health post-pregnancy.
Yeah.
Because it's like, go on, off you go, back to work. Mm-hmm. Or like, here's 6 months, but only 6 months, and you've got to really worry about money during that time. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks later, your boyfriend or your girlfriend's going to go back to work, and you're just going to have to sit there and basically have it attached to your tits for like 16 hours a day.
Oh God, I don't want anyone on my tits for that long. 10 minutes and I'm bored.
That's what Lauren took from that.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, I don't want anyone on my tits for that long. I've got no sensation in my boobs now from that, onslaught.
Really?
Yeah, it's totally weird. Having a baby's really weird.
One of my biggest like anxieties thinking about the future is if I had a baby in London, I'd be alone. And that is something I think about a lot. Because I'm
you
like,
must go home.
Well, my family would be up north. And I feel like I'm a little bit of a like a baby bird or something. I'm like, oh, but no, I would need to go back to the nest to have a baby. And then, because I can't think of anything worse about...
You take the instinct and run with it. I think it's true.
Yeah.
I think it's true. It like takes a village.
Loneliness is one thing, but I can't imagine what loneliness with this... It's a baby, not a thing, but you know what I mean. With a baby to look after and being lonely, I think I'd be too selfish. I think I would be too wrapped up in my own head and how I felt to give a baby any attention. But why are you crying? I'm really lonely too, actually.
That's sort of for me, the sort of existential crisis that began everything for me was like, I used to be somebody and now I'm no longer that person, and I was torn. I remember when my psychosis first started, I remember thinking to myself, if I allow myself to think of old me, I don't love my child. So anytime my brain flicked back to any memory, I stopped it. And I stopped it by allowing a voice into my head that just told me I wasn't allowed to. So then I started to employ these voices in my head. So then it's like, okay, now you're telling yourself stuff with voices. This is getting a bit nuts. And then I started to fixate on him getting really unwell if I would think of my old self. Mm-hmm. And then I managed to convince myself that if I turned my back on him, he would disappear. And so it all began with the existential crisis of, don't mourn your old self. You must love your new self. Mm-hmm. And actually, like, from someone that's been themselves for 35 years and loved themselves quite a lot, that's what we don't acknowledge when a child is born. Everyone flocks to the baby. No one ever turns to the mother and says, welcome to the new world. You're allowed to mourn your old existence and simultaneously celebrate the existence of the child. You know, that's a real, that's a really profound moment that is unacknowledged. Instead, people are too busy making you cakes with like a baby's head coming out of a vagina, you know, and telling you it's going to be the nicest thing that's ever happened to you.
Yeah.
And actually, it's not the nicest thing that's ever happened to you. It's the hardest thing that's ever happened to you.
Yeah.
Plus the nicest, plus the worst.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know if I want a baby.
Well, for climate change reasons, you shouldn't have one anyway. Yeah.
I can't imagine. I'm like freaking out thinking about
it. I'm fine now.
Yeah.
4 years later. If I had another one now, it wouldn't be the same, because I think even if I do get the chemical reactions of a depression or a psychosis, I think, one, I'll spot it.
Yeah.
Two, it's not the same once you've made the adjustment.
Yes.
I'm able to now, like I said to you, I'm so excited because I'm in London for the day. Mm-hmm. Like, I never thought I'd feel like that before. But now it's like, it's exciting because most of the time I'm dressed in my joggers, like screaming at a four-year-old to get his hands off that radiator or whatever it is he's doing. You know, or no, you can't watch Trolls for the sixth time today. You know, we've got to go outside. You've got to have a shower.
It just sounds awfully like you're just
get
in my house.
Yeah. So it's strange. But then it's what I realise, maybe going through the change of it, is that this isn't going to stop this change, this sort of like chrysalis, like sort of permeation of being, you know, like you're going to change. Mm-hmm. At some point, I'm going to look down at my body and be elderly. I don't get to stay my same way forever. I don't get to be myself for long. There's this lovely thing that the Mayans say that you walk alongside, sorry, just hit your microphone. You walk alongside your old self and your future selves. Yeah, so you're from a baby all the way up to this moment, and then all the way into your death, they walk with you. And at any time, you should look to them and ask them for advice. And I love that, because sometimes I think to myself, oh, God, and then I think, I'll ask my older, wiser self, you know, what would she do? And she's normally more rational. And then if I look this way and think about what would my old self say, like I'm having to make a big decision about a gig at the moment, you know, whether I do this long gig of Phoenix, what would she say? Well, she'd say, we've been waiting for this all your life, bitch. Older self would say, you missed a year without your kid, you know, like it's an interesting way of seeing the self, like, and I like that more. I don't know, is that a bit spooky?
No, I like that, because what people often say to me is, I forget I'm young because I work in comedy, so most people are
elderly,
older than me, like even just like 30 upwards, and I'm only 25 now, so I know I'm going to change a lot between 25 and 30. Like, I might have a kid by then, or whatever, or I might be married, or I might not even be with Matt, or whatever, like, who knows. And sometimes I'll get really, really wound up and stuff, and people have to be like, you're 25, you're a baby still, you're so, and I'm like, oh yeah, I am allowed to be confused, and I am allowed to be stressed, and because I'm not, and I think I'll still be allowed to be that when I'm a proper fully fledged adult and stuff, but I think sometimes I'm far too hard on myself for somebody who is still only 25 and got a lot of time to learn and a lot more mistakes to make, probably.
But you're ahead of everybody else, which is nice.
Yeah, that is. Cheeky little head start.
Don't fuck it up, Lauren!
I will fall first so those behind me can learn.
What was that? What was the journey to recovery, or recovery in inverted commas, like after the... Because were you diagnosed with postnatal depression, or was it just something that you came to the conclusion that you knew you had?
I was put on antidepressants. Mm. I would say I suffered from postnatal anxiety prenatally. I got anxious as soon as I found out. My mental health got bad as soon as I found out I was pregnant. Mm. My anxiety went really crazy. And I realised I'd always been an anxious person, but that this had perhaps tipped me over the edge of sort of panic attacky kind of territory. Mm-hmm. So I'd been chatting to my doctor about that anyway. And postnatally, that just ramped up really badly. So we talked about maybe putting me on tablets, let's see how we go. Things had started to settle down, and then Frank got really ill when he was 4 months old. So, and that kicked off a very quick spiral into depression. And so I wouldn't know if it was postnatal, although I was still in a postnatal period, or whether it was trauma, you know, probably both.
Yeah.
Serotonin would have gone to absolute shit. You know, I wasn't sleeping. He was so ill. And it was sort of around that time that these visions and sort of slightly more scary mental health things happened. Like, I imagined that my house was infested with spiders. Like, I couldn't really differentiate between visions and reality. You know, that was quite a small period of time, maybe 3 weeks while that was going on. And then I went back to the doctors and said, I'm actually seeing things. And she was like, quick, onto these antipsychotics. And I think I was on them for like a month. Mm-hmm. So I think it was all postnatal. Mm. But I don't know if it would have happened if Frank hadn't got ill. Not that he's to blame. But it was a lot for one person to take.
Yeah, indeed.
The road to recovery. Someone said to me the other day, well, how did you afford to not work? And I was like, I didn't stop working. I cancelled the tour. Then I had to make that blooming cancer musical. I remember the head of the National Theatre saying to me, you don't have to make it, you know, you can postpone it. Like, we would totally understand. I remember thinking, don't take this away from me, else I will actually die. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't not work. I can't be in this cottage any longer. I was living in the middle of nowhere. I need this. So I worked. I worked and worked. And actually, I think I self-medicated for about a year and a half. Really bad behaviour. Really promiscuous. Extremely reliant on alcohol. Like, still being a really good mum. But at any point I could think of, I just wanted to destroy myself. You know, I just didn't like myself. I hated myself. I had so much guilt, so much blame. Like, I hadn't processed anything. And even though I was in the middle of therapy and everything, it didn't matter. I was in a massive trauma cycle, you know, in the end. And I got a new therapist when I moved to Brighton. She got diagnosed with PTSD and started to treat me for that. And that really helped, because I hadn't realised that that's what it was. That it was trauma. Mm. I just thought I'd had postnatal depression, and that I was somehow, I don't know, that I was still depressed or something. But yeah, I tried to come off my tablets a couple of times since it all happened, and I just go mad. So I just stay on them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Nothing wrong with that.
I don't know. I think to myself, if I've got enough serotonin in my body, like, I'll just wee it out. Same as when I think about when I do MDMA.
What was it like moving, like, to a... When you said, like, you moved to Brighton, was like, weight off shoulders kind of feeling?
Yeah. I lived with my mum for a year in between. So for Frank's sort of second to third year, I lived with my mum. Because Tim and I broke up very quickly after Frank got unwell, which is often the way.
Yeah.
And we're still friends and stuff, but we didn't want to live in the same place. I wanted to live somewhere rural, but not as rural as where we'd been living, and he wanted to stay in London. So I moved to my mum's. Mm-hmm. She looked after me for a while and helped me with Frank, because it's quite a lot, because he's got neurological kind of impairment, so he's a little bit more hassle than a normal kid.
Mm-hmm. Hassle?
Just a little bit. You know, yeah. He has a lot of therapies, and he's just very behind, so it's like having a giant baby sometimes. Mm-hmm. And where other people, all these kids are like doing maths and stuff, and my kids just like can't even hold a pencil. So it's stressful. And then I was like, I'm going to move to Brighton. And when I moved there, I was like, oh my God, who knew that I was a secret hippie? You know? I actually walked past a shop the other day and I saw a pair of harem pants, and I thought to myself, they're not bad actually. And then I had to like punch myself in the face, gouge out my eyes with a spoon because I'm turning into a crusty. But no, it's lovely. The mm-hmm. sea. I think it's the sea.
Yeah, you're like me. Yeah. Once I was in Brighton for a gig last week, and just the second I stepped off the train and that kind of sea air, I was like, oh, I feel better. Maybe that was the last time I felt calm.
Yeah. My friend said to me, it's something, I've got honestly, if you invite people around your house in Brighton, and they're long-term people that lived in Brighton, the chances of them bringing wine when they come to your house is very slim, which I was really annoyed about. They bring things like sage, crystals, they bring stuff from their gardens. Uh-huh. Like, I'm just like, just bring wine.
Is this where the crystals started?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, put this crystal by your door and like that. Mm-hmm. But like, they're really like into all of that sort of healing stuff, which actually, once I surrendered myself to it, even if it's a placebo, I really enjoy it. You know, I actually really find quite a lot of comfort in it. And I think to myself, well, if that's what you find comfort in. Anyway, this woman said to me, with the sea at the bottom of the hill like that, mm-hmm. as you step off the train, you're getting something like ionized particles or something from the sea. Mm-hmm. And you know, like when you're at the beach all day and you've done nothing, but you're knackered because mm-hmm. the wind's been blowing at you off the sea. Apparently they're really rich in iron, those particles. Mm-hmm. And that's why when you step off the train and you take a big lung, it might be a lie, but you take a big lungful and you're like, oh God, I'm so calm.
Yeah.
Everyone, I make people come to Brighton mostly to have meetings with me now. I play the disabled mum card. I'm like, I can't leave. I just can't, which I can't, but like, you know, I'm like, you have to come here. And every time someone comes to meet us, they're always like, and they're really good mood. So I'm getting loads of work because they're coming down, mm-hmm. getting the iron, giving me work, and then fucking
maybe
off.
That's how we'll get rich. We'll bottle Brighton air and sell it on Etsy.
Just like balloons. It's good, Brighton, yeah.
I think it's quite a calm place.
You should move there. No, you should move north.
Yeah.
You move north, I'll move to Brighton.
As long as I'm on the coast somewhere.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Newcastle.
Is that on the coast?
Well, but like, you can be at the beach in half an hour. Yeah, which is nice. So like, sort of day trips on a weekend for the family would be like, we're going to the beach and you'd have the whole day there. I think that's maybe what
in
I found
a snow
hard.
Suit.
Yeah. And not in Newcastle, got bloody hot pants on. Like, what am I talking about? It's boiling. but then like, coming to London, I think maybe I do sometimes feel a little bit like trapped, because I'm so used to like growing up in the northeast and being like, we're going to the country for a day, or we're going to the beach for a day, and you're half an hour from either of them. Whereas I feel like if you want to get sort of out of London, obviously it's doable. You can go to Brighton or Southend, and there's countryside, but it's more of a mission. And I'm like,
where do you live? Walthamstow.
Walthamstow, yeah.
You need to live in the Heath.
Just lots of markets. That's about it.
Hipsters and markets.
And markets. And I'm like, no, I need some seashells. That's what I need. And some good chips. That's my happy place. By the sea. Nice bag of chips with scraps on.
Scraps. I used to work in a chippy.
Did you?
I loved it when people asked for scraps.
First time I asked for them in London, the guy just stared at his. He's like, what? And I went, oh, like scrunchions. And he was like,
what is a
He was
what?
Like, scrunchions. That's another name for them. Scrunchions.
As if he would be like, oh, yes, sorry, scrunchions.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And he still stared, and I was like, you know, like batter? And he was like, you want me to batter your chips? And I was like, no, you know the batter that's fallen off the fish? Can you put that on my chips? And he just went, no.
No, I can't.
I was like, you fucking can, though, can't you?
Why would I do that?
No.
Yeah, and I find it strange that you have to ask, but do you have onion vinegar up north?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. That's what we have in Peterborough, and no one has it. And I was like, have you got any onion vinegar? And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, the vinegar from the onions. Like, you want, yeah.
Ooh.
It's so good.
Nice. Chips now.
Chip spice, that's what they have in Hull. That's
chip
the best
spice.
Out of
it. Oh, yeah, I've had that. That's weird.
No, it's the best.
It's delicious, but it's weird.
In Australia, they have chicken salt as well, which
is
like my
favourite. Yes, I got really into that. Yeah. Really into
that. Anything really dirty I like.
Yeah.
Crunchups and Frazzles, chuck them on there.
I do that when I make a pasta bake. For my topping, I crunch up crisps and put the crisps on.
Nice.
And then I remember doing it once at a former boyfriend's house cooking for him, and his flatmate was just staring at me, and she went, I thought I was working class, but that's something else. And I was like, actually, they're walkers, so
yeah,
I did fancy
exactly.
crisps.
Yeah, fancy crisps.
Should we play some anxiety bingo?
Oh, yeah. So this is my anxiety would you rather, where I just give you two sides of a similar coin that are both anxious situations.
Is this going to give me anxiety?
Probably.
Yeah.
So if you just pick a number between like 1 and, we'll say 10.
10, please.
10. Da, 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 da. Which one is it? Okay.
You don't like this.
Would you rather get a text that says, we need to talk, or get a text that says, do you remember what you said last night? Because I've had both of these and they both fill me with fear.
I think the first one I'd hate, we need to talk.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Last night, my response would just be like, I was pissed, no.
Yeah.
You know? And also, yeah, I don't really think I'm like that anymore. Mm-hmm. That's a lie, it probably happened last week. But we need to talk. Oh, that's what my partner just texted me before I came in here saying, are we okay, hon? I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean, are we okay, hon? Like, and then I realised maybe he meant, he's dyslexic, so did he mean, are we okay for milk, hon? Or are we okay for, like, loo roll, hon? So I was like, what do you mean? And then it came back, loo roll. And I was like, don't send that message to me. Are we okay, hon?
Yeah. I hate the can we talk? Especially because I'm a relatively anxious person. So I know some people can just compartmentalise. That's a word I learned on this show.
Yeah.
Compartmentalize that and be like, oh, okay, well, that's a later thing, but that will eat me alive
all day. Yeah. We need to talk this evening.
Yeah.
It's the morning.
I've just had an email for the exact same thing, just popped up, said we just need to talk, and now I'm just going, oh, so I've obviously fucked up in some way. Let me go through the last 2 weeks and figure out what horrible things I've done this time. Like,
the thing having the fear when you've said something when you're drunk is, it's obviously a thing, and you worry about what you've said, but like, you know, it's just justified by being like, oh, I was pissed.
Mm.
No, that wasn't me. It's like in Split, that was Patricia.
Oh my God. Patricia Pattinson.
Yeah. She comes out after a few wines.
Does she?
Yeah.
Patricia, is that what she's called?
She gets very Geordie.
Have you got one?
I don't think I do. I think I just get really sleepy now.
My friend calls drunk me Brioni.
Brioni.
She's just like, Brioni was out last night. I'm like, yeah. I didn't know. I went home. Brioni stayed out. You know? It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, because you can feel the change, can't you? You're like, it's not me anymore. No, someone much more confident is here, and I don't like her attitude.
Yeah, she's going to say something mental. Yeah. I had to run up to Rose Matafeo the other day and just be like, I'm really sorry about the other night. And she was like, what? And I was like, I think I have flashbacks of saying something really, like, just really, just being a really obnoxious guy. She was like, I don't remember. And I was like, okay, great, see you later anyway. Yeah. But I was like, I have to go and say.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, because I was like, oh, I swear I saw, like, woke up like, oh no, I think I saw Rose last night. Oh God, what did I say? And I just remember there being sort of like aggro.
Mm-hmm.
Probably wasn't.
Yeah.
She was like, I don't know. And I was like, okay, Rose. Yeah. I met her when I first met you.
Oh, yeah. Latitude.
Latitude.
Yeah.
But apparently I didn't say anything, so it was okay.
That's good.
We've got about 5 minutes left, so do you want to ask our final
Lovely.
Question?
Lovely. Kind of ties in to something that you brought up earlier. And it's if you could go back to your younger self and give yourself some advice on mental health and living life without misery or with a bit less misery, what would you tell yourself?
Oh my God. Let me think. There's loads of things I would tell myself. I think I would have got therapy sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Before everything happened, I should have had therapy, like since I was young.
Yeah.
You know, like there's lots, when I think about it now, there's lots of things that triggered things that could have been sorted out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think it would be like, you know, like, you're an anxious person before I was unwell, or like, or even like, don't get together with Tim, or, you know, like, whatever, you know, whatever were the events that would lead up to the mental health crisis that I had. I think deep entrenched within me, there was always a breakdown brewing because of unprocessed emotion from childhood. And actually, I do transactional analysis. Is either of you two had that? It's very good. It's I think it's Jungian. It's like you have a child self and you have an adult self and you have a parent self.
Oh, no, someone did tell me about this.
And you sort of, you sit in therapy, it's just talking therapy, but your analyst will always sort of ask, and how old do you feel when you feel that emotion? And do you think that was the response within child mode or within adult mode or within parent mode? And it allows you to understand that sometimes your reactions come from something you've learnt very young and actually how to allow your parent self, which is the voice of whoever was kind of in charge of your upbringing, and your adult self, to kind of make peace so that you can parent the child within you. It's really kind of cheesy, but it's lovely. And actually, yes, I think I would have, instead of getting pissed every day of my 20s, I probably would have said, okay, if there's anything you should do, it's process your youth. Because it wasn't particularly traumatic. I mean, traumatic things happened, you know, like I said, like I was... think I've always thought women are mental and men are evil, you know. I think I was taught that at a very young age, and that didn't help when I felt mental, because then that meant that the man in my life was evil, you know, like, it's just so I think my message would be, before crisis, go and talk about your life with somebody who can help you to understand why you behave in certain ways. And I think once you understand why you behave in certain ways, you can parent yourself, and thus you can limit the amount of, like, you're parenting yourself when you say, I must get up and have a shower. Child Lauren wants to sit in bed and stew, you know, or she wants to eat sweets, and because she knows bed is the most safe place.
Exactly.
Parent Lauren will say, it's time for you to get into the shower, you stupid cow.
Yeah.
But adult Lauren says to herself, maybe there's an element of acknowledging that the childlike self in me is being shy, but I should be brave.
Yeah.
And that parent self-deprecating self isn't helpful, so we'll put her away. And then you get in the shower. See, so you can sort of allow yourself to...
like a middle ground. Nice. I like that. Yeah. That's a lovely way to end.
Thank you so much.
Cheers. We hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences, we can help each other know that things do get better.
And that's another episode complete. Thank you very much to Bryony for giving us her time. Thank you to Lauren for leading the conversation whilst I spent the entire episode fangirling in the corner. And thank you to you for listening. And thanks to Calm, obviously, and Dave, obviously. That's it for this week. Please let us know if you're enjoying the podcast by going and leaving it a little review and stuff like that. And go kick 2020 in the butt. You go do your thing. You live your best life. Cool. All right. See you next week. Have fun. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Would you give your mom, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I know what this one is.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell, and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.